Hello and welcome to Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. Today we have the very famous Jeff Spees. And just to tell you all the different things that he's done, that's a whole long list, but let's give it a shot. Jeff has put together the Solar Family Reunion that a lot of people have gone to. He's also put together a movie that's a really cool movie that we're going to talk about for sure. Solar Roots, Pioneers of Solar. Is that right, Jeff? Am I saying it right?
The formal title is Solar Roots, the Pioneers of PV.
Solar Roots, the Pioneers of PV. And then also he is on the board of CALSA. That's California Solar and Storage Association, formerly known as CALSEA. And then, of course, he has to have a real day job. And he has a company called Planet Plan Sets. And he puts together plan sets, and he's really good at doing that. I know he's affiliated with Go Green Solar. He has another podcast called the Solar Panel Podcast. He has worked at famous companies, including QuickMount and AEE Solar, which was started by David Katz. He worked on UL2703, and he is one of the top experts in the industry on this darn smoke alarm problem that we have. So what's up, Jeff?
Thank you very much, Sean, for having me here today. I'm excited because I just earlier today was able to get a tentative confirmation from my good buddy, Jason Vetterly, the director of Solar Roots, the Pioneers of PV, of a date and location for the debut of the public release of Solar Roots. I don't have that confirmed just yet, but really excited that we finally have a target to shoot for the release, which will be 9 years after we started the project itself. We started it at the first Solar Pioneer Party in 2015 in Humboldt County. And that was where the concept of filming interviews with the pioneers of the solar PV industry started. And while that event was a wonderful event, just one of the highlights of my life, quite honestly, probably the best party I've ever been to in my life, the interviews we filmed that evening just weren't right because we were trying to tell the story of how the solar PV industry started at night at a party. And after watching the footage where the stories were good, but you could hear the party in the background and noise, and it was dark out. And I thought, how in the world can you tell the story of how the solar PV industry started at night at a party? What we really should do is travel to the locations of where this industry really got its start and interview those people who were instrumental in taking solar photovoltaics, bringing it down from space and introducing it into homes around the world for generating electricity for regular everyday needs. And so that's how the concept of the documentary got started. It started out just as a little film project at a party and grew into 2 years of traveling around the country interviewing. I think we interviewed 40 some odd pioneers. I believe we did 50 some odd interviews, 40 some odd pioneers, and distilled that all down into what will be a 2-hour documentary film that tells the true and somewhat scandalous story about how the solar photovoltaic industry became an industry.
Yeah. And I know that kind of the way that it ends, right, is that the solar industry was started by hippies.
Well, that's the premise of the film, was the solar industry started by hippies? And it really forced me to ask some pretty deep questions that I didn't even think about when I originally thought about that question. Actually, the interesting story behind this, Sean, is when I first started working for David Katz at AEE Solar, I can remember like it was yesterday. So it had been 2007, and we were exhibiting at the, I think that was the NECA show in San Francisco. And I was there with, or gee whiz, was it NECA? But it was a trade show in San Francisco. And I was with Brian Teitelbaum, my coworker, Davey Ripner, another coworker, and David Katz, who's one of the bona fide top solar pioneers of the industry. We're walking through the streets of San Francisco, and he was telling me the story about how he got started in the solar PV industry. And it was fascinating, and it was right at that moment, and this is early in my time in the PV industry, that I started to hear through the stories David was telling and some of my other coworkers and other instrumental pioneers in the industry, that the industry was started by the hippies. And a number of years went by, and I had been hearing these stories about how the solar industry was started by the hippies. And when we decided to make this documentary film, I felt that was a reasonable premise. Was the solar PV industry started by the hippies? And it forced me to ask an interesting question I had never thought about up until that point, which is, what is a hippie? And I think we all have in our minds a vision of what a hippie is, but it's just funny because right now I'm getting a call from one of the main characters of our film, John Burdner, who actually speaks to this topic of, was the solar industry started by the hippies in the end of our film? And so the basic principle was I had to try to define what a hippie was. And I went to Google, like we do in this day and age, and I typed in hippie. And what was interesting to me was, honestly, I couldn't find a definitive definition through the researching I was doing on the internet of what a hippie was. And I decided in these interviews to start asking these main characters of our story, what is a hippie? And it's one of the favorite parts of the film to me. We finish our film with a simple question of many of the main characters of our film, is PV magic? And we get a diversity of answers, fascinating answers. And then I asked another key question, what is a hippie? And again, just a variety of answers that we assembled together to make a really, what I consider to be touching and poignant ending of our film to try to come full circle and answer that question of, was the solar PV industry started by hippies? And I will say without hesitation that I absolutely believe that the solar PV industry was started by the hippies. And to better understand the rationale, you'll just need to watch the Solar Roots documentary when we give it away free to the world in a year's time, after we debut it in what will be the fourth and final Solar Pioneer Party, but we're probably going to call it the Solar Roots Party, where we'll have those people that want to come and travel to the location where we're going to have it in about a year's time to see the film. But we're going to give it away for free to the world. I'm not looking to make money on this, even though I've dumped tens of thousands of dollars into the production of the film. I want this story to be seen by as many people as want to see it, because not only is it really wonderful for those people that work in the industry to learn about the evolution, the birth of this industry and the evolution of it, but I think it's a human interest story that I believe is going to connect with regular folks.
Yeah, so I've seen the movie twice, but it's been years since I've seen it. I think the first time I saw it was at the Oregon Solar Energy Industry Association meeting. I think that was probably pre-COVID, was it? I'm not sure.
Pre-COVID. Yeah. And what you're referencing, Sean, is the what I call the draft version of the film. It was a kludgy, rough cut version. Some of the same footage will make its way into the final version, but we were under duress to put that out in very short period of time. And it was a extremely challenging period in my life and Jason Betterly's life, and trying to rush to the theater that we had to show it at the debut, which was in 2017. So we started the project in the end of 2015. We finished the draft version of the film end of 2017. And it was not the smooth finished product that I feel it will be when we debut it in about a year's time. So I'm of the mindset, when you see the final version, it's going to be tight, cohesive story. Jason and I sequestered ourselves about a year ago up in Humboldt County to rewrite the script. And I feel we took that draft version and we jumbled things around so that it flows smoothly from beginning to end. I'll just say that I'm convinced, especially people in the industry, people that connect with this story, they're going to really love seeing the end again, because that whole ending of the story where we try to wrap a bow on the question of, was the PV industry started by the hippies? And we ask these pioneers for their words of wisdom. And there's just some super touching moments from, unfortunately, sadly, to a certain degree, some people have passed on now that we're pioneers, but things that really echo in my head, the message of these pioneers about how we in the industry and how society needs to look at our energy use and renewable energy so that we can be responsible in our daily lives and in our professional lives to try to improve the world around us.
Yeah, I think the second time that I saw it was at Intersolar in San Francisco. And I remember I loved it. It was a real awesome movie. So I think I'm going to be one of those people when I watch the next version, I'm going to be like, the first version was the better version. I'm going to just be an old fart like that.
No. I'm convinced that you'll feel that this version will be better. I already know it's going to be better, Sean, because we are going to fix a lot of the problems we had in that rough draft that we showed to audiences between 2017 and 2019. Our last showing of the film was at Governor Jerry Brown's house in Northern California, his ranch. He lives awesome. In a rural area. Yeah. And that was the last time, I believe, that we showed Solar Roots, and then COVID set in, and we have not shown it at all.
Oh, that's awesome.
We will not be showing it in the next year or so till we debut the final public release version of the film. So either way, we are fixing those things that cause me to cringe every time I see it. We have bad audio. We've got story that's jumbled. It doesn't flow. And in that week that Jason and I sequestered ourselves in an off-grid, undisclosed location in Humboldt County to rewrite the script, I feel that isolation allowed us to focus. And I'm absolutely thrilled with the final script. I think its story flows beautifully now.
Oh, it could be better than it ever was. Yeah, and speaking of Jerry Brown, too, I used to hang out with him in the 90s before he was the mayor of Oakland. In fact, two of my friends, one was my girlfriend, were his campaign managers from that Oakland mayor run. I was pretty impressed. Very super smart guy. So that's cool. So
well, I did ask him, too, if he was a hippie.
I was just going to ask you that.
And he says no, but I think he identified himself, if I could paraphrase his explanation, as more of a quote-unquote redneck. And honestly, I live my life somewhere between that hippie and redneck. I do consider myself a hippie, and I do consider myself to have a lot of redneck qualities, meaning I like the outdoors. I like the backcountry. I used to work on a farm, even though a lot of people don't believe this. I'm an introverted personality. I would much prefer to be in a remote rural location by myself or with a very small group of close friends. I tend to struggle when I'm in public environment with a lot of people. I do well when I'm with solar crowds because these are like-minded people. I really relate to them. But as is the case with people that are introverted, like I feel I am, that interaction with human beings face-to-face really drains me of energy. It's wonderful to do it with my solar family, but honestly, I'm not a socially outgoing person in any way, shape, or form outside of industry events where I can connect with people that share my love and passion of photovoltaics.
Yeah, I would think that there is a lot of crossovers between rednecks and hippies. Like, oh, yeah. I grew up in a hippie town, and they were all building houses, swinging hammers, buying used pickup trucks, all that kind of stuff. And even look at the solar people, too. They're building things. And once again, pickup trucks. So, and then you look at the music, too. You know, you got bluegrass and Jerry Garcia and all that kind of stuff.
Well, there's such a connection between hippies and rednecks that in Humboldt County, there was a term I had learned when I started working up there called hipneck, which is a hippie redneck. And okay. In fairness, I would say that those people that are often referred to as rednecks, I think that can be sometimes perceived to be a derogatory term, although I think it's a common enough term. Maybe we don't have to look at it in a derogatory fashion.
Well,
but
people, I hear that with hippies too. Well, just depends on what side you're on.
That, in fact, that was one of the feedback from the pioneers that we interviewed when we asked about, were you a hippie? And Wendy Dankoff, founder of Dankoff Solar, who was very famous in the early years of the solar PV industry, used to do a lot of wind generators, and then he moved into PV. But he stated that when he was young at that era, they considered being called a hippie an insult. He says, and I didn't think of myself at that time as a hippie, says, but now, all these years later, when he's an old man, he said, I guess I do fit the description of being an old hippie. So he didn't think himself as a hippie, but now he does feel that he meets the definition of a quote old hippie. But again, there's a lot of crossover, in my opinion, between hippies and rednecks. And I think that they share a lot of similar values. And I'd say that the single defining characteristic in my research on what a hippie is that a hippie is somebody who truly believes in the concept of sustainability. And that sustainability covers a number of different areas: sustainability in the way that we use the land, sustainability in energy creation and energy usage, sustainability in our relationship with our fellow human beings, the fellow creatures on this earth. And I think that people who believe in sustainability, which oftentimes the agricultural people that might be sometimes called rednecks, They believe that you can't extract more from your environment than you put back into it. And I think that is the common bond that connects hippies and rednecks, is that we truly believe in keeping the earth sustainable.
Cool. So I guess, are you a hippie, Jeff?
I'm a hippie and I'm a redneck. I relate to the concept of sustainability. So am I a hippie? Absolutely. I'm a short-haired hippie.
Yeah, sometimes I consider myself an undercover hippie, whereas I used to be having the longer hair and the tie-dyes and cranking up the Dead tapes and all that kind of stuff. I have, like, now I'm spying, so don't tell anyone. I'm spying for the hippies. Every time I put on that necktie, I don't really put on a necktie too much. But
you want to know, if you were to ask the average person in the street, are you an environmentalist? I'm sure that the majority of people would say, yes, absolutely, I'm an environmentalist. I'd say the majority. I'd say maybe it's as high as 75% of the population, maybe 80%, because realistically, even if you're a very politically conservative-minded farmer in the center part of the country, you still believe in conservation and in making sure that the land can continue to provide for your farming needs. And I would say that the vast majority of people in this world recognize that environmentalism is important to the long-term sustainability the existence of humans and other creatures. I just think that we often lose sight of the bigger picture when we all concerned about, by and large, I think most humans, whether they're politically liberal or conservative, I'm a centrist myself, but whether you're conservative or liberal, I think we share the same fundamental values. We care about the well-being of the people around us, by and large. Not everybody does. I recognize this. A significant majority of the population cares about others and they want the best for others. They might have different approaches as to how to get there, but that core element that most of us share in common, that we do care about the well-being of ourselves and our families and our friends and that extended group of family and friends. I mean, we should be able to try to come together on that core shared belief, whether you're conservative or liberal, to do things that are going to be in the best interest of the population of this planet, whether it be human or animal. Is regardless, we should be trying to promote a healthy future for future generations.
Yeah, I see that society gets very polarized. And I noticed that in the solar industry, of course, there's a lot of people that are over to the left and liberals and things like that. But there's actually a lot of conservative people in the solar industry, and they don't advertise it because they think that they're more of a minority or something like that. But I think it's really important to welcome everybody into the solar industry. And in some ways, they're helping, in a lot of ways, they're helping a lot more than that average person on the street that says, oh yeah, I'm an environmentalist. I put my cans in the blue can, you know, which is like, that's great and everything, but that's not near as much as like being responsible for one solar module being installed.
And I will say that I'm glad to see that they're putting their metal cans into the recycling bin. That's responsible. That's kind of recycling that matters. I roll my eyes whenever I see people throwing plastic into a recycling bin, because by and large, only about 5 to 10% of plastic, if that, gets recycled. You shouldn't buy plastic. Don't drink water out of plastic water bottles that are disposable. Stop buying so darn much plastic. Plastic is a horrible, toxic compound that is poisoning the waters of our planet, poisoning the people. I just saw something that even they're digging up artifacts from tens of thousands of years ago and finding there's plastic residue that's made its way through like 7 feet of soil. And I think that it's starting to be recognized that the plastic water bottles that many people take for granted, that the microplastics you're ingesting as a human being are being recognized now to have impacts on the way your body systems work, the way your hormonal systems work. And essentially, in all human tissue now, they're finding plastics in human tissue because we ingest so much plastic from the world around us. We breathe it in, we eat it, we drink it, and it's become part of us. And plastics are a wide range of chemicals that are made from oil, which is a toxic substance to all life.
Yeah, it's crazy. I've talked to people in the far future, from a billion years in the future, and they said that they went to the Grand Canyon and they looked at all the different layers and they said, oh, there was this weird primitive ape-like species that was a little bit smart. And they were alive during this period called the Pleistocene. And you can see that layer in the Grand Canyon. So that's what they said when I was talking to those future people, but the Pleistocene.
I'd love to get their phone number. I'd love to talk to them too. Okay. But yeah, I think humans are just smart enough to be disastrous to themselves and to the planet around them, unfortunately. And I guess the question is, can humans bridge that gap and get smart enough so that they don't destroy themselves? And that's the question that we in the solar industry think about a lot.
Great, great.
We interrupt you for a very important announcement. Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast has been brought to you by Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. That's right, Sean White is sponsoring his own podcast. And he wants to remind you to go check out some of his classes. You can go to solarsean.com and then click on the links to check out his classes. You can check out his heat spring classes, and you can also hire him to teach classes for you, like at your company, something like that. Now back to the show.
I totally loved your movie, and it was related to these solar family reunion parties that you had. And I thought that you had the last one. And unfortunately, I didn't make it to one of them. I think I was in Dubai and I was coming home and I had a ticket and all that kind of stuff. And you were nice enough to save me a shirt. You sent me a shirt.
Yeah, that was a Solar Pioneer Party. So what we had, just to kind of give the chronology, the Solar Pioneer Party that was originally held in October of 2015 in Humboldt County started just as a reunion from some of my coworkers at AEE Solar, because the company was just a formative entity in the PV industry. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience to work with all of those people at AEE Solar. It felt like you were going and hanging out with a bunch of friends every day and doing some stuff and getting paid for it. It was really wonderful. And unfortunately, you know, as often happens, circumstances change and the company, after a few years, changed kind of its complexion in a significant way. I left, a lot of folks left, and I really missed them. And about 5 years after I left the company, I missed so much going up to Humboldt County and hanging out with all the people I worked with. I said, well, let's have a reunion party. And it turned into the Solar Pioneer Party, which was attended about maybe 100 people, but these were heavyweights of the industry. It was the first time founder of Home Power Magazine, Richard Perez, had gone to an industry event in 10 years. And Richard, in fact, that was the last, I suspect it might have been the last substantive time that he left his homestead in Oregon before he passed on a couple of years later. And it was like a magical event. But we held the second Solar Pioneer Party in Grass Valley, California, the following fall. We held the third and final Solar Pioneer Party in Willits, California. That was the one you were probably stuck in Dubai.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was where we debuted the documentary Solar Roots. And then we had two solar family reunions, one in Paonia, Colorado, one in Tucson. They were really nice events. But what we'll probably do when we debut the documentary is we won't do the Solar Pioneer Parties. Those are done. We did three of them. They were fantastic. Just special memories I'll never forget. But we will probably have this, call this the Solar Roots Party, which will be the documentary debut. And from there, again, we'll be releasing the film for free to the public. And I'll move on with my life into new arenas. I'll just go back to my little nerd life of working on permitting plan sets and just take a lot of satisfaction in the realization that I helped bring a wonderful story to the masses, one that will outlive me, I hope, and one that will hopefully inspire many people, not in the solar and storage industry, but just regular folks, to support renewable energy and to support the general concepts of sustainability. Because quite honestly, future generations are absolutely, their lives are dependent upon humanity understanding how to achieve a balance with nature.
So this Solar Roots Party, do you have any idea when it's going to be or when you'll make that announcement?
All I'll say right now is tentatively approximately a year from now, and the location, probably announce it within the next 1 to 2 months. I'd say that's a strong, like probably in the next month, I'm guessing. There's a few confirmations that I'll need before we can really lock in on time and location. But I'm confident, Sean, that you will find this a very convenient location and a very appropriate time frame. So I sense that this is going to be well received by the Pioneer community and by those individuals that have been most focused on seeing the documentary when it does come out. So I'm really excited from my discussion with Jason Vetterly earlier today that we've got the right location and the right time frame.
Awesome. I can't wait. Was AEE Solar your first solar job or full-time solar job?
Interestingly enough, it was not, but it was my first job in PV. I actually, when I was in college in the mid-80s, worked for a solar water heating company. I was a telemarketer calling people when they were eating dinner, setting up sales appointments to learn about the StarPack solar system, which was a solar water heating system. I went to Michigan State University, and I was good at talking people into seeing a salesperson to learn about this solar water heating system. But then after I got out of college, my degree was mechanical engineering, I went to work in the industrial automation industry. And I was in that industry by and large for, oh gee whiz, from 1987 until I got into the PV industry 20 years later in 2007. So I started my foray into the PV industry working for AEE Solar, which at the time was headquartered out of Redway, California, which sounds like it's one of those suburbs around the Bay Area, but it's not. It's 4 hours drive north of San Francisco in Humboldt County, which is a real cultural experience for somebody who's never been to Humboldt. I definitely would recommend going. It's one of the most beautiful parts of the world that I've ever been to. And it is definitely one of the most unusual cultural parts of the world I've ever been to.
Yeah. Love Humboldt County, all the redwood trees and lots of, well, there used to be a big growing industry, and we know what we're talking about there. We don't have to say it, but now it's legal.
It's legal now. So when I first started working,
took all the fun out of it.
Well, it's no longer scandalous, but at the time I was going to work there, marijuana wasn't yet fully legal. It was moving in that direction for medical marijuana, but recreational marijuana legality didn't happen for about 7, 8, 9 years after that, but longer than that. But it was funny, when I was first going up to Humboldt County, in fact, my interview, I traveled up there in early 2007 for my interview with AEE. Maybe it was mid-2007 now that I think about it. And I got the job in July of 2007. But I went out to lunch with the individual that would be my boss. His name's Jeff Haas. I actually work with him now. He's with our sister division over at Go Green Solar. And when we were at lunch, I just asked him what would appear to be a fairly generic, normal question of, gosh, what are the industries up here? And his response was tourism and marijuana. At that time, marijuana wasn't legal, but it was at that time and still probably is the number one industry in the Humboldt County, which only has like 80,000 people in this very large county. So it's a dispersed population. It's remote and rural in much of it. It's got a lot of dirt roads with a lot of people that walk around their property barefoot, and they look like hippies. And it's an interesting place. And I fell in love with it, quite honestly, Sean, when I started to go work up there. There's a certain something that you can't really put into words about Humboldt County that just really resonated with me. And I think it was that combination of people that were hippies and people that were rednecks and people that lived this rural country life, and they would grow their own food and they would make their own energy with solar panels on their roof or on a ground mount. And they would try to live sustainably where they weren't extracting more for the land than they could put back. And I really found that to be just something magical.
Yeah. And it was actually a lot more dangerous to be doing marijuana in those days, too. I remember that they sent out the military one time, and it was in all the papers, or probably multiple times with helicopters and people going to jail.
There was actually a war going on that very few people know about in Humboldt County during the 80s and 90s, where the federal government decided that they were going to try to stop the illegal marijuana industry. And at that time, all of it was illegal. And it was kind of laughable, but essentially they had airplanes and helicopters the airplanes that were doing spotting of illegal marijuana grows and helicopters that were doing eradication of marijuana plantations when they would find them. And there were literally gun battles going on between the growers and the military that were trying to stop them from their livelihood. So it's an interesting, lesser known aspect of history in our country where there were what I call probably the marijuana wars of Humboldt County, Humboldt and Mendocino County, to a small degree, Trinity County, but that is what's called the Emerald Triangle, where you have marijuana being grown in those three counties, which are all adjacent to one another. And really the bulk of it was in southern Humboldt County and northern Mendocino County. And it made me wonder, when I started doing the research for Solar Roots, I was like, why is it that the solar industry was born in northern Mendocino and southern Humboldt County? And it made me then wonder, why was the marijuana industry there? There was a connection. The connection was that the early years of the residential solar PV industry were driven by profits from illegal marijuana sales. So these marijuana growers, they had a cash crop. They were making money hand over fist, and they were some of the very few Americans in this country that had not only the need for solar panels because they didn't have access to utility grid power that we're accustomed to in suburbs and cities around the country, but they had access to this cash crop that they could make a lot of money, and they wanted to have electricity on their property, and they couldn't get it in any very cost-effective way. The only alternative usually was to have a gas-powered generator, but those are horrible, because they're noisy and they're polluting and they're unreliable. And everybody who had generators back in that era just absolutely hated having to use a generator. And when these expensive solar PV panels came around, these marijuana growers were the first people that had the money to buy what at that time was insanely expensive electrical generation source, but it was reliable and it was cheaper than running a gas generator. And that was at the core of the start of the PV industry. But it made me wonder too, why is it that the marijuana industry settled in southern Humboldt, northern Mendocino? And I thought about this a lot. I thought a lot, Sean. I thought about this for years. And I came to the realization eventually that the reason that both solar PV started in southern Humboldt was because of marijuana. But the reason marijuana started in southern Humboldt is in the 60s, when that youth movement was underway, the hippie movement, obviously you had a massive migration of kids across the country to Northern California to join up with that hippie movement in Berkeley.
Haight-Ashbury and Berkeley. Ashbury.
Yeah. And what happened was, as Richard
Summer of Love.
Yep. 1968. But when Richard Perez went and moved to San Francisco in the late 60s, the way he described it, and I think his experience was very similar to those that moved to Humboldt County, says that they moved there, I think, looking for this new youth utopia. And what they discovered was it wasn't as simple as that. There was a negative side to all those young kids that were altruistic and wanted this utopian society. That's not the way the real world works. And the way he described it is that the experience in San Francisco became stale. And what happened was so many of the young people that were interested in forming this new society based upon this concept of sustainability and peace and love, I guess some people would say, they realized that they weren't finding it in a big city. They were just, in essence, searching for it in a big city with a lot of other like-minded people. But then they decided that if they were really going to achieve their desire to live more harmoniously with the land, that they had to move to a rural area. So now, when you start to look around San Francisco, where could you, at that time in the late 60s, early 70s, where could you possibly go that you could, first and foremost, afford land and have a parcel of land that you could grow your own food on? Well, if you start looking at the roadmap, you could try to go south, but there really wasn't much south where you could do that in the homesteading approach that many of these young hippies wanted to experience. So what most people did is they either went east from the Bay Area up into the Sierra foothills, and that was a pretty good collection. In fact, that was one of the earlier epicenters of the solar PV movement, was that area centered around Nevada County, Grass Valley area. But a lot of folks went north. And what you found is when you went up into Mendocino County, it starts to get very rural, and because it's rural, there's no electricity, there's no running water when you get out into these rural areas where you can buy land super cheap. That was the key, cheap land. And then what really made the marijuana industry happen and subsequently the solar PV industry was that it turned out that Southern Humboldt and Northern Mendocino had an interesting geographic anomaly, which was there were no real good roads that ran through that rural country. It was logged over land. So you had roads. They were old logging roads. They were undeveloped dirt roads. And there was a lot of land that could be bought in tracts because they were logged over. There was no more value for these lumber companies that were taking all the trees out. They had taken out all the trees that had economic value, and they were left with what they thought was worthless land. And there were a couple key land developers, Bob McKee, who we interviewed in the documentary, was one of them, who bought that land for very cheap prices. And then they sold out these parcels. And Bob used to sell it for $25 down and $25 a month for a 40-acre parcel. But you have these balloon payments where they would come due during harvest season. So when these people that were moving out there, they were growing their crops, i.e. marijuana, when they went and sold that marijuana, they could pay off their land payments. And that's what started this youth movement moving to Southern Humboldt and Northern Mendocino. And because the other unique geographic anomaly of that area is it takes a long time to get from the nearest law enforcement office to that property. So they were given kind of carte blanche to grow marijuana with limited government opposition to it. Although, as I stated, in the 80s and 90s, the federal government tried to shut down the illegal marijuana grows, and they were met with armed hippies. Think about this. No gun rights. I saw this great hippie from that era.
Like NRA no hippies.
Gun rights. Gun-toting hippies. Uh-huh. That's right.
So ran into them myself.
And in fact, I say to people that have never had that opportunity to really immerse themselves in a hippie community like Humboldt County, that there's as much as a political spread in the hippie community as there is in any other community in America. You have bleeding heart liberal hippies and super conservative, don't get the government my business gun-toting hippies.
Yep.
Hippies has very little to do, I think, in my way of looking at it, necessarily with your political persuasion. I think it has a lot more to do with your values. And if you believe in the concept of sustainability and, you know, not polluting the earth and being self-sufficient and making sure, again, you don't extract more from the environment around you that you put back, to me, that's what a hippie is. But again, you've got conservative hippies, liberal hippies, and hippies like me that are centrist.
Yeah, I was living up in Calaveras County for a while. And I ran for Congress. I didn't win. It was actually a very conservative county. But I remember going to this meeting where there was a bunch of growers and thought, oh, I could get my petition signed so I could get on the ballot. And that was the big question that they kept saying is like, you're not going to take our guns away, are you? And they're all, you know, like you were saying, like dreadlocks and tie-dyes and everything like that. So
there is, while the story of the marijuana wars is not well known, Sean, there is some bits and pieces that you can search for that show what it was like at that time. One particular story that I've heard from the locals up there is there's a town in Southern Humboldt County called Alder Point. I was always, don't just drive to Alder Point. That's sketchy. And it is, because you have not only a lot of marijuana growers, but now you got a lot of meth labs that are up that way and a lot of sketchy people that aren't pleasant to be around, quite honestly. So there are certainly negative attributes to some of the hippie community. But in the town of Alder Point, there were also a lot of, you know, reasonable marijuana growing families and homesteaders. And what they had done is they had banded together as a community to stop the federal government and the local government from being able to bust their marijuana growth. So what they would do is they would have these lookouts that would be watching the one and only road into the area. And if they saw the police or the federal government coming, they would radio ahead and they would have these big graders or other bulldozers that they would use to maintain the roads up there. And they would just park them across the road so that the law enforcement couldn't come in. And the law enforcement, after a while, realized that that was an unpoliceable area. And the county, the sheriff's department, in essence, for probably decades, and even still today, just won't go to Alder Point because they know that they're not welcome. And it's a sketchy proposition whenever they go up there. At the same token, the federal government that was trying to bust all these marijuana growers in the 1980s and probably into the 90s, this was during the Just Say No era and Just Say No to Drugs. Remember that? Just Say No to Drugs? That
oh, was yeah. Ronald yeah, and it Reagan was like probably answer. The drug dealer that was wearing that shirt, too. Just
Well, it depends on how you define drug dealer. The funny thing is they say just say no to drugs, and we've got pharmaceutical industry that's getting people hooked on opioids. They're more of a drug dealer. I mean, for goodness sakes, opioids were legal and promoted by the government for many years. They ended up hooking people on these synthetic opioids in the way of OxyContin and oxycodone. And they were saying, well, don't smoke marijuana, but they were getting people hooked on the synthetic equivalent to heroin. So it's either way, that's a separate story.
Caused a lot of deaths.
That the war on marijuana was not a small thing. It was serious, and it involved armed conflict, guns. They were shooting at the airplanes. They were shooting at the helicopters. When the military went in there, they had machine guns, and there was conflict, to say the least. I don't know if there were actual fatalities in all of the gunfire that was going on, and I suspect there probably were, and I suspect that some of those fatalities that might have been the growers were never reported because, again, this was illegal industry. And even today, when there are deaths up in those, there's still a lot of illegal marijuana growing going on up in those counties. And you know, a lot of times you've got undocumented immigrants that are coming in from other countries to work these marijuana grows. And when some of those people get killed, they get buried and nobody talks about it. So there is a sketchy element to these lawless areas that became lawless because the federal government scared the shit out of the growers and they became armed revolutionaries in a way. Obviously, that's changed tremendously with the legalization of marijuana. The money's gone out of the industry. The Southern Humboldt, Northern Mendocino County now have become more sleepy communities where the way of life is changing again. You had a lot of folks that were living up there, growing their own food.
Making a lot of money and now making nothing. Price went down.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So real estate prices have plummeted. It's hard to get homes insured because of the fire danger in Northern California now. But it's turned back into kind of the sleepy area that it was when I first started working up there for AEE. So that whole area is culturally rich and it's super beautiful. As you stated, the redwood trees, the national parks, the national forests. It's just one of the most beautiful, special places I've ever traveled
to. It's God's country. And maybe what we can do is like list off some of these solar companies that started the solar industry and say why the solar industry was started not just by hippies, but in Northern California. And so I know you were working at AEE Solar, which was founded by David Katz, who I was fortunate enough to sit next to on an airplane coming back from Intersolar in Munich one year. And I was like, you're David Katz, because I knew who he was. He's famous. And so I got to hear all these neat stories, and it sounded like he kind of invented the solar industry almost in certain ways and AC coupling. And he's a real smart guy too. He wasn't just a hippie. He was a super smart engineer.
He's a genius. Yeah. Hands down, he's a genius.
Yeah, he's a genius.
David's a genius, and he is absolutely, in my way of looking at the development of the industry, I'm not talking about solar PV technology because solar PV technology was invented by scientists and the military and Bell Labs. But the industry was invented by the hippies, and David Katz is one of the top five characters that were instrumental in taking this technology down from space and introducing it to homes around the world to generate electricity for making music and lighting up your home.
Yeah, that was what I liked about your movie, too, is it kind of started off, I think it started off, if I can remember that right, where there is like some hippies trying to play a dead tape and their batteries were going dead. And they're like, wow, look at this thing. It's a crystal that makes energy from sunlight. So that was just a really neat movie. I can't wait till everybody gets to see that. But yeah, so David Katz started AEE, and I believe that starts for Alternative Energy Engineering. And yeah, also, yeah. Or maybe there's like a double meaning.
Awkward, the name of the company was hard to say. And when they changed it from Alternative Energy Engineering, which is a tongue twister, they changed it to AEE Solar, which was also a tongue twister.
That's pretty good. I mean, it is three vowels in a row, but let's just go with it. And I think that he sold it or something, right? And he has other companies now. One of them is like Tamarack. It's a racking company. And I think he owns Backwoods Solar. Is that correct?
Well, he used to. Backwoods has been bought out by the management there. So David's getting to that age where he's looking to spend less time working, although he's got such a bright mind. I know for a fact David will never stop working. He just is not working to the same degree that he used to. I think a lot of people look at David and they're like, that's a hippie, because he looks like a hippie. But David is absolutely the hardest working man I've ever met in my entire life. And he's absolutely, I would say, probably the brightest person I've ever met in my life that I've gotten to know. I mean, I suspect there's people like Albert Einstein that might be higher on the IQ level than David, but believe me, David is very high up on the IQ level. And the thing about David that is unique in my way of looking at it is, not only is he super smart, not only was he instrumentally an accomplished pioneer, because obviously there's a lot of times there are smart people that aren't very accomplished, but David's super smart, super accomplished, but he's got the trifecta. He is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in your entire life. He's so easy to talk to. He's just a delight to be around. And I once said to him, I was like, David, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but when I come here and stay at your off-grid house and I work for AEE Solar and I'm working, it says, it doesn't feel like work. I would pay money to take a vacation at the house I get to stay at when I'm up in Humboldt County. And going into work never felt like work, even though I got paid for it. It just felt like hanging out with good friends and doing interesting stuff that we all enjoyed doing. So it was a special moment in my life working for David. I treasured that time that I was able to work with him. I still talk with David regularly. We collaborate on various things. And I consider David to be one of the dearest friends I've ever had the good fortune to meet and get to know. And I consider him to be absolutely one of the most interesting people to talk to. Every time I talk to David, it's a fun conversation. He is just one of a kind, plain and simple.
And so you just said that you were working from his house. So you got a job with AEE Solar and you just went to the owner's house and stayed there and worked? Sounds pretty
cool. So the way it was set up is, David had his original 40-acre homestead, which he bought with a land partner in near a small town. You can't even hardly find out.
For $25 a month?
Well, I think it was 40 acres and $400 an acre. So I think that when you do the math, it's only $16,000 for 40 acres. He went into it with a land partner, bought a parcel of land near a small hamlet named Briceland, California, B-R-I-C-E-L-A-N-D, Briceland, California. And he got his homestead and started building his own cabin on the homestead, which turned into the house that was used to house people like me, employees of AEE that were traveling up there for work. When I would go to Humboldt County for those trips to the main office location in Redway, I would stay about 15 minutes drive west of Redway, north of the town of Briceland, David's original off-grid homestead. And it's a wonderful, beautiful place, just absolutely majestic scenery. He's on a steep hillside that faces south. He's got somewhat of an overgrown garden out in back of the house there. But the way I heard it described is, they're funky little homes that all these hippies built in the hills. And David's house certainly qualifies as a funky little off-grid cabin in the woods. But just a wonderful experience to stay in a beautiful, quiet, peaceful location and then drive 15 minutes into work in this hippie town of Redway to work with people that were some of the most delightful people I've ever had the pleasure to be around in my entire career.
Well, that sounds like the best job in the world.
For a couple of years, it was the best job in the world. And then things change. You know, obviously, life is full of change and we have to adjust to that. I'm a ordained Dudist minister, and precepts of being a Dudist is you accept the universe as it is and you come to peace with it. So, you know, I came to peace with the change. I went to work for Quickmount PV for a few years, which was really a positive experience overall. And then I started my company.
Have that in common, but working with Stuart Wentworth. So Stuart and Claudia Wentworth started Quickmount PV. And in 2008, in March, I started working at this company called Fidelity Roof Company with Stuart. And the both of us were the solar division. And also worked with Stuart. I was fortunate enough to get to see him develop this square piece of metal that turned out to be very lucrative for him. And he's a super nice guy. And so is Claudia, a super nice person.
Yeah, Stuart's a character, that's for sure. He makes me laugh. He's got a really entertaining personality. And Claudia's got an incredibly good heart. So again, working for Quick Mount was a very positive experience overall. And then I started my business that I've been in now for next month. It'll be 6 years, Sean, that we started
Planet Plan Sets. Oh, wow. Congratulations. So Planet Plan Sets.
And as wonderful an experience as it was working for AEE Solar, which at that time had been by far the best job I had ever had in my life, I have to say now that the company I have now is the best working environment I've ever had. Obviously, I'm biased. I did start the company. I'm president, but such a wonderful group of people that just enjoy working together. We all are nerds. We really love the work we do. We're different than other third-party solar and storage plan drafting companies in that we're very technically minded. I live, eat, breathe, and sleep solar and energy storage and EV charging and codes and standards and technology. I love it. I could tell
you love it. Yeah.
Look,
yeah, just talking
me.
To you.
You won't see this. My backdrop is all my old solar panel collection. I find solar photovoltaics to be a truly magical, magical technology. And if you look up that word magic, I think a lot of people, as Brian Teitelbaum pointed out when we were talking to him and interviewed him about, is solar magic? And I've watched this segment so much time. He says, yes, it's magic. He says, a lot of people, when they think of magic, think of a magician, but that's illusion. Magic is a flower. Magic is a leaf. Magic is those intangible things that we can't fully grasp, but we know it's special. And it really connects with a part of our being that I guess you could say your spirit, your soul. I think magic is when you see something, you know it's magic. You don't know why it's magic, but you feel it. And solar PV to me is magical. You put this black piece of glass in the sun, it doesn't move, and electricity comes out of it. Holy mackerel, that's magic.
That is magic. Crystal magic. Silicon crystal magic.
Backward transistor magic.
Backward transistor magic. Photodiode magic. Yeah, super awesome. And so let's maybe go back to naming some of the different companies that came out of this Northern California hippie solar era. Another reason I'm doing that for too is I've been on the board of NorCal Solar for 10 years now. And actually, we were just talking about Claudia Wentworth. She used to be president. I'm currently the president of NorCal Solar, and we're having our 50-year anniversary this year. On April 26th, we're having our party. And so I was trying to think of all the companies that came out of Northern California, because NorCal Solar was there and helping to instigate these people that you were talking about, these solar hippies up there in the Redwoods that were selling solar modules to people that were growing weed up in the hills. And so let's see, I could name off a few and I'm sure you can add to it. So we said AEE Solar, there's Iron Ridge. Let's see, Real Goods, Solar Living Institute. And maybe we could say a little bit more about Real Goods and Solar Living Institute. There's John Schaefer, and he started that. And the Solar Living Institute was such a cool place. I taught some classes there. My second one I taught there was for grid alternatives in a yurt. And they have trees growing out of cars. They had this really neat area with all this showing solar off. And it was just driving up Highway 101 and Hopland. And it actually shut down because I could blame it on the legalization of the marijuana, because then there became this new industry. And then this marijuana company bought the Solar Living Institute. And then they had some kind of mold problem. And of course, the profit went out of it, that industry, and they went under. And so not too long ago, I think they were trying to sell that area for like $3 million. I'm not sure if they sold it or not, but they were trying to sell that area. I mean, I had some great memories out of that place. And then Real Goods, the part that wasn't the nonprofit, started by the same guy, was sold. And now it's owned by Alt-E. So you could go to altestore.com, and that's where Real Goods is left. And I really like Alt-E too. They're on the East Coast. They're over there in Boston, and they've had me do a number of NEC workshops for them at their annual conference. So shout out to them. And who am I missing right now? I'm sure that I even know who they are, just some of these Northern California companies.
Kind of do a quick rundown. I'll start in Humboldt, work my way southeast and then north again. So in Humboldt, it was Alternative Energy Engineering, which morphed into AEE Solar many years later. So that was David Katz's company. They were straight up one of the most significant pioneering companies in the industry. Then you had going a little further south into Willits and Mendocino County, you had Real Good Solar founded by John Schaefer. And John's a charming individual. He's also a prominent and very influential pioneer in the industry. I'd say he's into that realm of one of the five most influential pioneers of the early years of solar. So that was Real Goods. And Real Goods founded the Solar Living Institute, which was the compound. It was the grounds in which Real Goods operated out of. But Solar Living Institute really was Real Goods. And then you had going a little further south, you had Solar or DC Power. They
Oh,
were
yeah.
so DC Power founded by Joseph Marino.
Yeah, I taught some classes for them like 15 years ago or something. Yeah.
And then going a little further south into San
And and,
Francisco
and
Bay
DC Power now, they're still around, but they're called Solegent.
Area. Solargent. Yeah. Going a little further south, you had Solar Depot, which
Oh,
then
okay.
merged with DC Power to become Solargent. And so that was founded by the Mazzanis and really wonderful couple. We interviewed them and they had some just touching things to say in the end of our film that really I was so happy we were able to. Akija
The
and
Solar Depot founder, right?
yeah,
I
Mazzani were the
remember,
founders.
yeah, I remember he came to my class one time when I was teaching in like somewhere near San Bernardino, California. And I taught a class there, and I remember he came. Like, I thought maybe he even lived down there or something at the time, but that was quite a
No,
while ago,
they live
too.
up in Marin County. So you had AE Solar, Real Goods, DC Power, Solar Depot. And then when you go east, one of the other pioneering companies was Independent Power Systems. Actually, it was an interesting story that we tell in the documentary, but it was originally a collaboration between Johnny Hill, Sam Vanderhoof, and Ron Kennedy. And after they started selling PV modules at the Earth Store, Sam and Ron started Independent Power, which was a small solar distributor based in Grass Valley area. It was actually on the city of North San Juan. And then the other company that was significant in that era was Backwoods Solar in Sandpoint, Idaho. So those were the most early solar PV suppliers to the off-grid home community. And I'll just mention too that the concept of pioneers has to be expanded to some other folks. In our documentary, we interviewed some really influential individuals, Mark Morrows being one of them, hands down, one of
Oh,
the
yeah.
influential trainers of the early years of the PV industry. Mark actually worked at Spectralab making solar cells for the space program in the, I
Like the
think Mark
70s
must
or
have
something?
started
I
his
remember
stuff.
people were saying, like, there's never going to be terrestrial solar and things like that. And he
Well,
was like
so he
hand
started.
soldering space cells or something.
And so Mark and then, Charlie Gay, who ran ARCO Solar or what was originally Solar Technology Incorporated, STI, which turned into ARCO Solar. And we interviewed Charlie Gay, who also ran the Solar Energy Technology Office for the Department of Energy. A lot of people affiliate that with the Sunshot program. So there's some other people that were pioneers that weren't selling the technology, but were influential in, again, getting that technology deployed into this residential marketplace. Arthur Rudin, who was the first salesperson who bridged the gap between the early PV module manufacturers and the off-grid home supply houses that were selling solar panels to these folks. And then you had pioneers scattered. Ezra Auerbach, who had his alternative, oh gee whiz, I'm trying to remember the name of his current company, Alternative Currency. He was up in British Columbia. So you had all of these pioneers of those early years of the solar home power movement that really exposed the world to this technology. Regular people, like in the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in Custer, Wisconsin, or Amherst in its early days. This is central Wisconsin, an agricultural community, and you had this group of individuals that formed together to put on this annual energy fair where they would bring people in from all over the world, even from Antarctica, to learn about solar photovoltaic technology. So there were very key individuals that were critical to helping make an industry. I can't leave out Johnny Weiss with Solar
Oh,
Energy
yeah.
International in Colorado because the education element was critical. Obviously, you had these early pioneering homesteading companies that were selling to these off-grid homesteaders like Backwoods Solar and AEE Solar and Real Goods. And then you had folks like Johnny Weiss that were teaching people how to do it as a business or even how to do it for your own home. So it was a really interesting, organic, collaborative endeavor for these folks that were the suppliers to the off-grid homesteaders, the manufacturers that were supplying the home, the supply companies that sold the solar panels to the homesteaders, and these educational oriented individuals that were teaching people how you make the systems work. And then you can't leave out Richard Perez and Bob O'Schultz and Kathleen Schultz with Home Power Magazine, who, like Johnny Weiss, helped educate folks as to how to buy solar panels and put together a system so it could generate electricity for lights and music in your homestead. So those were the key folks we focused on in our documentary film, and along with a handful of others. And I'm just absolutely honored that I could help bring this story to the world, because it's a story that needs to be known. And it's just a fun story. Even
if
you don't think of it as a documentary, think of it as an interesting story with a little bit of scandal mixed in about how this technology came down from the space program into homes around the world.
Yeah. You ever going to write a book about it?
Probably not, because who reads books anymore?
Yeah.
You can see them.
Those crazy book people. Plus, that's another thing about this podcast and what I've kind of thought about it is, especially when we have people like you on here, it is documenting this stuff forever. So once this stuff gets posted, it's in the cloud and it stays throughout until the end of humanity, I guess, or whatever is beyond.
So there's going to be maybe 20,000 years from now, some entity in a planet far, far away might be listening to me talk to you about this, and they might find it interesting. I hope you do. Mm-hmm. Hello from the past.
Yeah, what's up, aliens? Yep. Or I guess they're from the future, just because that light travels so slowly on a cosmic scale.
Oh, well, you never know. If you can fold this time-space continuum and you can travel long distances in an instant. So we just, as humans, our brains aren't yet evolved enough to comprehend what the secrets of the universe. And I don't know that humanity will ever get to that level of fully understanding the secrets of the universe. But there's something wonderful in not understanding everything about the universe around us. It's neat to unravel the mysteries of the universe, but at the same time, it's kind of nice not knowing all of the secrets of the universe. I find that to be, it makes life worth living every day, Sean.
Yeah, I have this fun conspiracy theory that the aliens that landed in Roswell had solar PV on their ship and we stole it from them. Does that sound like a good enough conspiracy theory?
What year was Roswell again?
It was, what was that, in the 50s? Or it was like right before they've invented PV, I think, or late 40s, I think.
That's an interesting theory. I would say, based on the research that John Perlin, who is the bona fide historian for the solar PV industry, has done, I won't say that wasn't part of the equation, because quite honestly, I do feel that there's probably technologies that humanity has picked up from outside of
1947, and then they came up with the PV module in 1954. See, connect the dots, right? And I'm just being fun too. I hope nobody thinks I'm crazy.
Well, you know, and we do in our documentary, even though it's in the early stages and it only spans about 15 minutes of our story, we do explore the birth of the technology going back to Edmund Becquerel with the discovery of the photogalvanic effect in the early 1800s. And then a few decades later, Adams and Day discovering the photoelectric effect, although they didn't fully understand it. Shortly thereafter, Charles Fritz erected the first solar photovoltaic system in Manhattan, New York, with selenium modules. Didn't generate a lot of power, but certainly demonstrated concept. And it wasn't long after that Albert Einstein described the photovoltaic effect, which was
or photoelectric effect.
The photoelectric effect, true. That he actually won the Nobel Prize for the photoelectric effect. Everybody thinks it's because of E equals MC squared. That's not the case.
Yeah, all that crazy space-time stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and in fairness, you could have probably given Albert Einstein a lot more Nobel Prizes for all the brilliant stuff that he conceived in those years. And then you actually had quite a gap, although there were some minor discoveries during that period from the early 1900s when Einstein discovered the photoelectric effect until the silicon solar cell was developed by Bell Labs in the 1950s. But there were some intermediate discoveries that involved some lesser known characters. But you asked if I might write a book. Probably not. But we have over 100 hours of interview footage from these instrumental pioneers of the industry. And I suspect one day when I get the intestinal fortitude to dive into the archives, I will probably extract out certain interviews and make them available to people. We have a group on Facebook called the Solar Pioneers Group that a lot of people who are really nerds like me
I guess I
say,
better get on Facebook.
well, that's the significant amount of my engagement on Facebook is this particular group called the Solar Pioneers Group. And I'll likely start testing the waters with some of this interview footage down the road and just make it available to that group so that at least the most committed solar history nerds that are part of that group will have the opportunity to learn a little bit more about the history. I think one interview in particular that I want to make available in its entirety is the interview from Richard Perez, founder of Home Power Magazine, because while it was not maybe the most uplifting interview, it was one of the most interesting stories that I've ever heard. There were hopeful elements of it and some sad and disappointing elements of some of the discoveries that Richard experienced through his exploration in his life of humanity and technology. And I would say, probably the thing that I would say is that Richard, while he really soured on civilization and humanity, and he moved into a really remote part of the world to try to flee the evils of civilization, the irony is that he ended up creating this really wonderful community through Home Power Magazine of like-minded, sustainability-minded, renewable energy enthusiasts. And it was kind of an interesting spin on his own story where he was disappointed in civilization and humanity. And he ended up, even though he was fleeing people and civilization, he ended up creating this community of people from his remote Oregon homestead. And that interview I do want to make available. It was about an hour and 15 minutes long. I think I asked three questions through the entire interview. And at the end of it, I was like, gosh, Richard, you're really good at telling that story. He says, because I practiced a lot. So he knew when he had that interview with us, Sean, and I didn't fully grasp it at the time, although I had an inkling of it. I think he knew that was the last time he was going to tell his story, and he wanted to tell it right. And
Wow.
he was on point, man.
And so where are you going to post it?
Solar Pioneers Group on Facebook.
Oh, to post it on the group, because I mean, if you wanted, I guess we could post it here.
Well, I'll likely also, I've got a website for the documentary film. If you just Google the search term Solar Roots, you'll find us quickly enough. There's only two or three other hits that you're going to get. One is a solar contractor in Puerto Rico, but their website's in Spanish and ours is in English. So you can figure that out. And then there's a solarroots.org. It's a nonprofit organization, small nonprofit. And there's a wonderful animation sequence at the beginning of our film where we have this solar PV tree that then sends out roots to all of these locations around the US where the solar PV industry really got its initial start.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks so much, Jeff, for putting all this history together. I really like history and stuff like that, and history of the solar industry just fascinates me. So I love talking about it. And
Me too.
you are such a wealth of all this history. It's incredible.
Well, I like you, Sean, I do enjoy history. I guess you could say I'm a storyteller. And as a storyteller, I love listening to stories from other good storytellers. And I've had some of the most wonderful storytellers that have taught me the history of PV. And all I feel I've done is consolidate these stories into one place.
Great, great. Time out for a second. How long do you want to go on? Do you want to talk about other stuff like NABCEP or planet plan sets and smoke alarms? Or do you want to do it a different time?
No, I don't want to
I'm...
talk about boring
Okay.
day job stuff. I want to talk about
Okay.
fun history. I should say,
Okay.
I love the technology. It's a
Well,
wonderful thing, but I feel that this interview was focused on the history and it's been really wonderful to really focus on a fun story. And I hope that your listening audience has gotten something interesting out of
Oh,
this
for
discussion.
sure. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, we could go on forever. So, do you want to finish up now or do you want to talk about more of this or?
I think we've probably done a reasonable justice to the story of the solar history. And I feel that, you know, we could always do some other nerdy technical talk at a later time, Sean. In
For
fact, as
sure.
far as I'm concerned, you don't have to cut any of this out of the interview. I feel that we've, in my mind, I've had the opportunity.
Okay, forget the timeout.
I appreciate the fact that I've been able to come here and not only talk about the documentary, but about the history of our industry and about how wonderful and magical this technology is. I hope that, again, the listening audience is inspired to put a little more sustainability into your daily life. Start a garden. Go buy a metal water bottle and don't buy another plastic water bottle as much as you can try in your life. Just recognize, again, that the earth around us is precious and is finite, and we have to respect it. We have to give the respect to the planet that has given all of us life, and we have to recognize that we must be a cultivator of that environment around us. We have to take care of it because it's critical to future generations' ability to exist.
Great. And thank you so much, Jeff Spees, for being on Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. Jeff Spees is on the NABCET board. How long have you been on the NABCET board for?
I started on the NABCET board in 2009, and I started on the California Solar and Storage Association board in 2014, I believe it was. So I'm about 10 years on with CALSA and 15 years with NABCET.
That's awesome. And that's a lot of work. So thanks so much, too, for volunteering to be on these very important boards. And then also, anybody that needs some plan sets, go check out planetplansets.com, right? Best plan sets you can find. And it's unbelievable.
We're different than the others. We're not the cheap guys. We don't turn them around fast, but we do it right. And that matters when you've got energy storage systems and increased technological complexity. So appreciate you giving the business a plug, Sean. And maybe the next time we talk, we can talk about some of that nerdy stuff that I love so much that occupies my day job.
Great. Well, thanks so much. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for listening to Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. To find out more, go to Solar, S-E-A-N, that's solarsean.com, and you can find out there about classes, all these different places where you get all this great information, because we are in the business of education. That's right, sticking stuff to your brain cells. Get smart,